Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Fortunate over the years on important international matters that Aaron David Miller has come on with us at different key times. Aaron David Miller, just short of 25 years working with the U.S. Department of State. He is presently senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And with the end of an extraordinary life for Colin Powell yesterday, the news breaking, we wanted to get on an excellent guest, and Aaron David Miller qualifies in all of those areas again. 1978 to 2003 with the U.S. Department of State. So that's Democrats, that is Republicans, that is top names, well-known legacy individuals, including the four-star general. Aaron, it is always a pleasure. I read your story today on your reflections of Colin Powell. I want to touch on that and touch on other issues. I want you to tell me about what the Department of State was like under a Powell leadership compared to other well-known names that so many of us recognize.
You know, I work for, first of all, Chad, thanks so much for having me on. I work for half a dozen secretaries of state, George Shultz through Colin Powell, or at least the six secretaries that I got to know personally and have direct contact with. Those were the six. Each brought a distinct sort of view to both the process and substance of American foreign policy. James Baker, who I interviewed on one of my recent podcasts, Carnegie Connects, which is worth looking at, was probably a Secretary of State because of his personal relationship with George H.W. Bush, which was the closest of any Secretary of State to any president in the modern period. Clearly, and the best negotiator since Henry Kissinger that I'd ever come in contact with. Was the most consequential in the sense that he had the ear of the president, and there were momentous times, 1989 through 92. There was a lot to work with in the world. You had the collapse of the former Soviet Union, German reunification, Saddam's invasion of Kuwait. Baker and Bush 41 responded to that. Each secretary in their own right confronted a different president, a different set of circumstances. All were unique, in my judgment. It was an honor and privilege to work for all of them. Powell, I think, was the last Secretary of State that I worked for and got to know, and it was only 2 years. What was impressive about Powell was the degree to which he influenced me with his character, his capacity, his human interaction. The man was a master in personal relationships. He invested in people. Just one example which connects to your question, and Powell told the story. They were preparing the president for a visit to Mexico, and instead of reaching to the assistant secretaries or the senior officials, Powell decided, he told his staff, you get me the two most junior officers in the Department of State that work on Mexico. I don't want any fancy titles. I want men and women who are hard workers, who know the stuff. And his staff was sort of taken aghast. I mean, it's a briefing of the President of the United States. And these two performed incredibly well, as Powell knew they would, because he motivated them by giving them responsibility and, as Powell described it, by trusting them. Those two went back, and word spread through the department that Colin Powell had allowed the most junior of officers to brief the President of the United States on a high-stakes first visit. Trust, which was critically important to Powell, because trust generated loyalty. And loyalty in the best sense of the word, not blind obeisance, loyalty in the best sense of the word, motivated people to work on matters that are larger and broader than themselves. And Powell reflected that. I said to somebody the other day, maybe put it in the piece that I wrote, that all great Americans and all great American leaders have this sense that you must turn the M in me upside down so that it's a W in we. Powell was ambitious. He was calculating. He saw his opportunities. But all of that was tethered to a broader issue, which was the furtherance of the security and prosperity and democratic governance of the American Republic. That's why he was so special. And, Chad, I'm telling you, I thought about it for the last 48 hours or so. I'm looking around trying to figure out, where are the Colin Powells? Well, yes. The truth is,
trust
there
me.
Aren't
I,
any.
I want to get to that next segment for sure.
Yeah,
because where are
there
those
aren't
individuals?
Any. In large part because the experiences that drove Powell and molded him, in many respects, the selflessness, the sense of duty and mission that are required, we lost a lot of it. And my own kids are tired of hearing this from me because, you know, I work for half a dozen secretaries of state. They're tired of hearing James Baker stories. Baker was another one whose early years molded his sense of purpose. So, I mourn Colin Powell, even though I only worked for him for 2 years and others knew him far better than I did, but I had a personal interaction with him and a personal relationship, which was meaningful, I think, to both of us.
So, because of everything that happened with Afghanistan, with 9/11, in particular with Iraq, we look at this almost as much historically as we do at the time. That's why I think you have a relatively young George W. Bush. You have an extraordinarily experienced vice president in Dick Cheney. You're bringing back a lot of these old hands, including in Donald Rumsfeld. On that dynamic and Powell, how did that play out? How was that different? You talked about this great relationship that Baker and H.W. Bush had. But knowing there were these prominent names who all were vying for the voice, the ear of George W. Bush, how did Powell play to that, knowing he was going to stay true to who he was?
Yeah, I think he tried. The UN speech may well have been an example in which he tried to balance equities, and it in many respects didn't work, and he came to regret having to validate what proved to be faulty intelligence about Saddam Hussein's possession of weapons of mass destruction, particularly chemical and biological weapons. I think Powell fared probably as well as he could. Partly, it was a consequence of Powell's deep conviction that it's the president of the United States who makes foreign policy. Full stop. You can disagree with the president in private. I don't think Powell ever warned Bush 43 plenty of the consequences of a decision to invade a country roughly the size of the state of California population-wise with insufficient forces and a woeful misunderstanding of Iraqi politics and a set of goals which were untethered from reality. But he probably never said to the president, do not do this, Mr. President. And he wouldn't say it publicly in any event. So when Bush 43 came to him and said, Colin, I need you to go out there at the UN and give me, you know, a kind of Adlai Stevenson 1962, show the pictures, the intercepts, to basically say why Saddam is a threat and why military force may be the only alternative that we have. Powell, he reflected on it. I mean, he wasn't the resigning kind. So he got the speech text from Cheney's office. They worked on it for 4 days in conjunction with George Tenet. They drummed out a lot of the stuff that was probably unsubstantiated, but it was he was left with a justification based on intelligence that was inaccurate, to say the least. So I think he was outgunned, he was outmaneuvered, and it wasn't just access to the president. Remember, the National Security Advisor, the vice president, are physically, literally closer in proximity to the president. It wasn't just that. It was that ideologically, Cheney, Rumsfeld, basically had a different view. 9/11 created a sort of imperative to do things that the United States had, on a scale the United States had never done before. Powell was a product of Vietnam, and the prudence and restraint that emerged from that war and informed the Powell Doctrine, which basically had three elements. Number one, make sure if you're going to use military force, you're for political goals, those goals are achievable. Number two, get public support for your mission. And number three, if you go to war, you do not go to war incrementally. You go to war with a massive preponderance of military force. And frankly, those three, that informed, those three were not present in Vietnam. They were present Desert Shield, Desert Storm. It's why that operation, the ground war, lasted 4 days. We lost 137 servicemen and women and a couple hundred others in accidents. But that was a successful and, I think, a sort of poster child. No, Saddam was not removed. But, you know, you had Baker arguing to Bush 41, you know, if you go to Baghdad, this is what's going to happen. Powell warned Bush about this, but the difference, I suspect, was that Bush 41 listened to Baker, and Bush 43 had other influences in the wake of 9/11. I mean, even 43 said to somebody in the Oval that there was a bloodlust up. There will be blood. There was a lot of conviction that somehow, even though there was zero connection between al-Qaeda and Saddam of any meaningful kind, they wanted basically to project American military power. So I think that he fared as well as he possibly could. You know, generally two secretaries of state in the history of the republic have resigned over principle. William Jennings Bryan resigned because he didn't like Woodrow Wilson's policies toward the First World War, and Cyrus Vance resigned in the wake of, not before, in the wake of the Carter's abortive Iranian hostage rescue mission. It was over principle. But Powell's whole life was tethered to a set of institutions and the notion that you don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. I'm not giving up my job. Maybe I can influence matters from within. I'll have no influence if I leave. So I think all of that was pulled and pushed in his calculations.
And, so you don't think leading up to it, when he still had the doubts, that he ever gave any serious consideration to going to the president and saying, we're just not on the same page, sir, and that you need to have somebody else who's going to make this presentation who believes in this 100%?
There's a long article by Robert Draper who's written the best book on why we went to war in Iraq, which talks about the lead-up to the speech. And it has Powell confided in someone after Bush came to him and said, I need you to go out there. You're Colin Powell. I mean, the most popular man in America, according to a poll.
Yes, for sure.
I just don't know. If you ask me, and I don't know Colin Powell's inner mind, if you ask me whether or not he seriously considered having that kind of conversation with the president, I think the answer is no. I don't think he, in fact, he says in the Draper article to someone, I'm just not the resigning kind.
Aaron, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, especially on this one, to get some insights and honor the life of a man who led just this extraordinary and unique life. We'll reach out again. Thank you, sir.
All right, Chad. Thank you. Take care.
Aaron David Miller, Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, worked with six different secretaries of state. His last one was Colin Powell, and he worked across parties from 78 to 03. I want to talk about Powell and how for year after year after year, he was the most admired person in this country. And are we again at this point where it's almost impossible for anyone in our society to be the most admired person? Because we are so divided, or we so want to chip away, or that particular industry galvanizes others to not like it. Like right now, you tell me if you think we have a definitive single person as the most admired person. And does it matter? Okay. It doesn't matter in the global sense of how great our country is, but does it matter that our cynicism permeates all aspects of our society? Where, by the way, you can be admired and you can make decisions and the public can decide we've taken a new view. But now it seems like no matter what somebody does, we're going to find out, or tens of millions are going to find out or declare, no, I can't stand that person no matter what. Even if facts don't hold up in that area. Love to hear from you through phone calls and texts on this topic. 651-461-9226. I want to talk right now about K&S Heating and Air. And no air's on right now. No air conditioning on now. Maybe if it spikes up to 75, 76, yes, the air conditioning may be on. I like it cool in the house at night. Guess what? Tomorrow, if I wake up and it's 40 degrees in the house, well, it's not going to be 40 degrees in the house. It's going to be 40 degrees outside. If it's then 63, 64, I'll turn that furnace on. This is the time of year. We've been waiting for it. We're finally going to get to it where the air's on one moment, the furnace is on another. I don't doubt that because I work with K&S Heating and Air, around since 1989, in the metro area since the mid to late 90s. I've been a customer for 8 years. Reach out to them. Have the spring and fall tune-up. Have a free home estimate. Have your ducts clean. Maybe make a major change with a Lennox product and change your air conditioner or furnace. All can be done. It's up to you. Check them out online, ksheating.com. Just finished an interview with Aaron David Miller on the life of Colin Powell. And at the end, just before this previous break, I talked about how admired he was. Think about it, Dan. In the mid-90s, the Clinton folks were terrified he was going to run against Bill in 96. He steps away, Bob Dole does, and Clinton rolls. When he finally, during that stretch, came out as a Republican. When later he would come out and speak out. Well, I think we have the audio, right? Did you find the audio when he spoke out?
I do, yes.
About turning Obama into a Muslim, which of course he was not. But then as he says within the soundbite, oh, by the way, what will be wrong about it?
Yeah.
And called out his party. This is the special position Powell had achieved within this country that very few people seemingly have the opportunity to right now. So here is Colin Powell on what was happening with birtherism and hatred towards Barack Obama, as opposed to just a strong political, philosophical disagreement.
I'm also troubled by not what Senator McCain says, but what members of the party say. And it is permitted to be said such things as, well, you know that Mr. Obama is a Muslim. Well, the correct answer is he is not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He's always been a Christian. But the really right answer is, what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? The answer is no, that's not America. Is there something wrong with some 7-year-old Muslim American kid believing that he or she could be president? Yet I have heard senior members of my own party drop this suggestion. He's a Muslim and he might be associated with terrorists. This is not the way we should be doing it in America. I feel strongly about this particular point because of a picture I saw in a magazine. It was a photo essay about troops who were serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one picture at the tail end of this photo essay was of a mother in Arlington Cemetery. And she had her head on the headstone of her son's grave. And as the picture focused in, you could see the writing on the headstone. And it gave his awards, Purple Heart, Bronze Star, showed that he died in Iraq, gave his date of birth, date of death. He was 20 years old. And then at the very top of the headstone, it didn't have a Christian cross. It didn't have a Star of David. It had a crescent and a star of the Islamic faith. And his name was Karim Rashad Sultan Khan. And he was an American. He was born in New Jersey. He was 14 years old at the time of 9/11. And he waited until he can go serve his country, and he gave his life. Now, we have got to stop polarizing ourselves in this way. And John McCain is as non-discriminatory as anyone I know. But I'm troubled about the fact that within the party, we have these kinds of expressions.
Beautiful and a precursor what was coming, Dan. That's 08. That's 08 about Obama and McCain running against each other. We are so much more polarized. Donald Trump emerged in due part because for year after year after year, he lied about Barack Obama on his birtherism, on his faith, Barack Hussein Obama. And it's worked. It worked. He became the president. He might become the president again. So I'm admired. Let's look at last year. The two most admired man and woman in this country, Donald Trump edges Barack Obama, and Michelle Obama is the female. Then you look at the political divide and think about last year. Attacked by COVID. Tony Fauci. We're tight. We call him Tony.
Yeah.
He was named as the most admired person by 5% of Democrats, only 1% of Republicans. That was then, Dan. Think about it now.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a full-on industry to say Fauci's lying, he's in on it, even though, you know, he helped Reagan with HIV. He received the Medal of Freedom from George W. Bush, but no, he's a Republican. I don't know if there's a military person right now who, when people think of this person, cross party lines, doesn't come to mind.
No.
Doctors and scientists. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. You're pushing COVID too much. You're trying to shut down society. Or, hey, I like this doctor because he's pushing back against COVID. Sometimes people through entertainment have been around so long and they've done so much good in other parts of life where they get that rolled in. No, now there's a political divide on that.
I don't know.
Somebody does something heroically in Louisville, Kentucky, right? Steps in and stops something. Guess what we do? The next 2-3 days, we go combing through their Instagram, their Twitter, their Snapchat to find out a way to chip away and bring them down. I don't even know how it's possible to be admired in this society right now.
I think through politics at this point, when would you say that perhaps the most admired figure might be Jimmy Carter, mostly because all you ever hear about Jimmy Carter is him building houses for folks that are homeless. He doesn't, you don't hear political positions from him anymore. You almost have to have been someone who was at one point engaged and is now entirely disengaged in order to have even a breath of a chance to be admired in that sense.
And if he spoke out on issues,
yeah, no, then it would go away.
That would change.
Yep.
I was highly critical of George Bush, the politician, on key decisions during the administration. George Bush afterwards. And even I didn't doubt the decency of the person. I questioned the execution of idea after idea. But when George Bush appears now and speaks out, I think he resonates with me a great deal. And it's not just the last speech going at Trump. But if you say that, the further left folks are like, oh, look what he did. Mass murder. And again, I didn't agree with Iraq. I didn't agree with Katrina. I didn't agree with parts of the surge. There were many parts where he was wrong. And that's a part of history and shouldn't be forgotten. But we just will not take that moment or that evolution about a person or that moment where they're at and admire that without just going at them over and over and over again. Adam's in the mix in a matter of moments on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.